Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty.
All right, welcome in FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig, Corey LeBounty, Ian Blair with you on this Monday night. And, well, guys, stop me if you've heard this before, but we have a hurricane heading our way. This time, Hurricane Zeta just became a hurricane this afternoon. And, well, take a look at any of the cones that are out there on the internet right now. And Mobile, Alabama, squarely in the middle of most of them. It's coming our way, Corey.
You know, Dalton, Mr. Toomey, the principal at Murphy High School, said it best. This particular 2020, he's seen more cones than cookies and cream, ice cream. And I agree with that. I mean, we've seen more cones come along the Gulf Coast. And, you know, after this, Dalton, I pray that everybody stays safe again.
Amen.
And continue to recover from Sally and Delta as well. And it's just another one. And welcome to 2020.
Hey, all you have to say is 2020. That's exactly right.
It's a new curse word.
Yeah. It will be. I don't think you'll be allowed. The FCC will not allow anyone to say 2020 after this year
ends. I agree.
Because you can add that to George Carlin's list of seven words you're not allowed to say.
That's one of them.
After this, there will be eight words, and 2020 will be one of those. I guess one of the saving graces, one of the good things, if you want to look at the silver linings here, of this storm is it's right now looking like it will come in late Wednesday night, early Thursday morning, and hopefully that means that our high schools here who are entering the final week of the 2020 Alabama high school football season, hopefully that means they don't have to readjust any of these games that they have scheduled. Sally, they had to make a lot of changes for. That was because of after the hurricane, what Sally left for cleanup, and all the Baldwin County schools had to kind of readjust. But this one coming in Wednesday night into Thursday morning should be moving pretty quickly, and hopefully all these high schools in our area will be able to wrap their season up on schedule Friday night.
The biggest thing that I'm scared of is that we've already had some games that were moved to Thursday because they wanted to allow that additional day Friday to go scout their next opponent for the next week's playoffs. Now you possibly, I know Steve Mask at St. Paul's moved his Thursday game back to a Friday game against Vigor because of the storm coming
right in.
And some of these fields don't drain well. So it'll be a slosh or slop fest in the situation. And, you know, you add the COVID restrictions on top of people being flooded. That's just a bad situation.
It really is. And keep your ears tuned to FM Talk 106.5 throughout the week, just like any hurricane or system that moves through our area. We'll keep you updated on the latest info regarding Hurricane Zeta. Well, I'm not sure how many college games we'll have to readjust this week. I know South Alabama's playing on Thursday night, but that's an away game. So I'm thinking right now that South Alabama will be in the clear from this storm on Thursday night. But the latest top 25 rankings released yesterday, and hard to believe, I was just talking about high school, and we've almost made it to the very end of the 2020 high school regular season. We've now already made it through 8 weeks of the 2020 college football season. Now, the SEC has only been playing for 5 weeks now, and the Big Ten, of course, just got started this last weekend, so they're only 1 week into their season. But as a whole, the NCAA has had a schedule and been playing that schedule for 8 weeks now. And just like the first 8 weeks of the poll, Clemson remains ranked first this week. They got 52 of 62 of the first place votes. That comes after the Tigers beat Syracuse 47-21 Saturday. Now, Alabama picked up 10 first place votes after dismantling Tennessee 48-17. Tide remain ranked second in the top 25, and they've been there all year long. Ohio State, now that they've played a game, jumped two teams to number three on the top 10. Notre Dame coming in fourth. Georgia was off this weekend, but they're ranked fifth this week. Oklahoma State is ranked sixth, and the Cowboys, the last undefeated team remaining in the Big 12. And I had that game pegged incorrectly this weekend. I thought Oklahoma State would fall, leaving no undefeated teams in the Big 12. I was wrong with that, and Mike Gundy's mullet continues to rage during this season. Cincinnati comes in at number seven. Texas A&M dropped one spot to number eight. Aggies had a bye this weekend. Wisconsin moved up to number nine. And Florida remains steady at number 10 after they, too, were off this weekend. But just like last week, No other SEC teams are ranked in the top 25 outside Alabama, Georgia, Texas A&M, and Florida. Some other notable scores from this weekend: South Alabama now 3-2. They've won two games in a row after beating Louisiana Monroe 38-14. And what a game for Kawan Baker, the touchdown maker. Six receptions. He turned half of those into touchdowns. Three touchdowns. Had a total of 154 yards receiving. And the Jags, with a big win, a necessary win, put the first 17 points on the board and then outscored what I'm calling the Boarhawks instead of the Warhawks. I probably am not the first to say that, but Jags outscored them 21-7 in the second half. So a nice win for South. They've now won twice at Hancock-Whitney Stadium and are 2-0 in conference play for the first time ever.
That's the first time ever in the history of the program, Dalton, and you're talking about a program that's over 10 years old now. So that alone is very impressive, and you would have liked to have seen them get a win over Tulane or UAB, but the fact of the matter is there was that room for improvement. You go 3 weeks without football, and bottom line, you won the games that you were supposed to win to begin conference play, and that's what's important, and they're meat of their schedule is getting ready to come up, as they're going to have close to 3 weeks on the road before they return back home. But they did win, and congratulations, Kawan Baker. You're looking at him make SportsCenter top 10 for a nice touchdown catch that he had. But congratulations to Coach Campbell.
Yeah, and Baker named the Sun Belt Co-Offensive Player of the Week for that performance. He is the fourth Jag to win an award, a weekly award from the Sun Belt so far this year. We'll go into that game in more detail later. In the other SEC games involving now unranked teams, Auburn outdueled Ole Miss 35-28 to break a two-game losing streak, and the Tigers outgaining the Rebels 462-444. But they won the turnover and time of possession battle. Outside of that, a very, very even game, just swapping touchdowns until the very end. And we'll go in on this game more when we break it down a little bit. But before that, big game for Roger McCreary, former Williamson Lion, had not only an interception on the first drive as Ole Miss was moving to score, but also snuffed out a fake field goal in the third quarter while the game was tied at 14. McCreary, I mean, what can you say about him, Corey? He has really... Risen to the level that was expected of him coming out of high school here in Mobile.
Has to be one of the most valuable players for this Auburn defense. And he's a guy that is going to continue to become more vocal for the Auburn Tigers. They're going to continue to need that. A couple of weeks ago, he was picked on. And, you know, Roger has a lot to prove. And, you know, when he looks in the mirror, I know he challenges himself. And he takes it on personally when another team feels that, hey, I can go one-on-one with McCreary and try to beat him. And I just think he's the type of special athlete to where he's going to continue to get better for the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, he had a great game Saturday. Auburn's next opponent, LSU, they were without starting quarterback Miles Brennan, but it didn't matter. They may have actually found someone better, but LSU beat the brakes off South Carolina 52-24 Saturday. Another hyphenated last name getting it done for Louisiana State. You know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has moved on to the big leagues, but on Saturday it was sophomore running back Tyrion Davis-Price with 135 yards rushing and a touchdown in the win. And I mentioned with Brennan out, they moved another quarterback in his place, and true freshman quarterback T.J. Finley was an efficient 17-21 for 265 yards, two touchdowns, and one pick. And that loss for South Carolina ended a two-game win streak for them. So they're on the other side of one of these streaks that some of these teams have bounced off of. And Missouri took care of business against what I thought was a strong Kentucky team, 20-10. Mizzou's Larry Roundtree III rushed for 126 yards and two touchdowns, each of those from a yard out. And Kentucky offense just putrid Saturday. They were outgained 421-145. Quarterbacks Terry Wilson and Joey Gatewood combined to go 4-for-13 with 47 yards passing. I haven't seen a time of possession game as off balance as this one. Missouri won the time of possession 43-17 and had 26 first downs to Kentucky's 8 first downs. And that loss snaps a two-game win streak for UK. And everyone was down on Missouri going into the game and high on Kentucky. And you go ahead and flip-flop those after this last game.
Well, Missouri being 2-2, and they're continuing to improve, but Kentucky just looks like they're going in the wrong direction as far as their record 2-3 is concerned. You look at them being able to defeat Mississippi State a couple of weeks ago, and that was a good win. And you look at their loss to Auburn early in the season, to where momentum took them out of that game. But I just think that, like you said, Kentucky has to have better quarterback play in order to win more games in the SEC, and Missouri is trying to turn that corner.
Yeah, well, the NHL and NBA wrapped up their postseasons just in the last couple of months. Now the MLB trying to do the same. The LA Dodgers one win away from a World Series title. They're off tonight. Dodgers lead the best of seven series 3-2 and could clinch the franchise's seventh World Series title in Game 6 tomorrow night. But coming up, we want to talk about the NFL. It's been over a quarter of the season we've yet to talk about the NFL here on Sports Night. So that's what we'll do when we get back on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig, Corey LaBounty, Ian Blair with you on this Monday night. And, you know, every week during the college football season, first off, the name of the show, Sports Night. And we're here year-round every Monday night. And really come, I want to say, second week of August until mid-January. Corey, stop me if you disagree. This becomes not Sports Night, but SEC Sports Night.
And yeah, it does.
There's a couple factors that play into that. First, it's only an hour. Mm-hmm. And second is we love talking about the SEC. Alabama, Auburn, we break the games down every week. South Alabama, with them being local and me being a graduate of South Alabama, we love talking about those teams. But we are fans of other sports, and rarely do we talk about the NFL. And now as we near the midpoint of the season, I figured now would be as good a time as ever. And after yesterday's games, only one team remains undefeated in the entirety of the NFL, and only one team remains winless in the entirety of the NFL. And both right now reside in the AFC. Yesterday, the Pittsburgh Steelers took a huge early lead over the Tennessee Titans and end up holding on to defeat the Titans in Nashville 27-24. That kept their record spotless at 6-0. And then that left the Seattle Seahawks with the other only perfect record going into Sunday Night Football. And probably the game of the week, I think it was the game of the week last night with Seattle and Arizona going into overtime, and Kyler Murray doing just enough to propel the Cardinals over the finish line. And they actually beat Seattle last night. I believe the final score, 37-34 in overtime. So that leaves Pittsburgh as the remaining undefeated team. But I don't think that means Pittsburgh is the number one team in all of the NFL. Just watching them some yesterday, and I'm a big Tennessee Titans fan, born in Nashville, grew up going to the Titans games when they moved to Nashville in 1998. And, Corey, your mom would appreciate this. Mm-hmm. They started playing at Vanderbilt Stadium, at Commodore Stadium, before their actual stadium was built there on the banks of the Cumberland. And I was going to those games when they were in Vanderbilt, too, with Steve McNair, Eddie George, Frank Wycheck. A little bit later, the next year, they added Javon Kearse. Kevin Carter came over on defense. So there were some good years for the Titans, but through it all, their biggest rival has been the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't know if the Steelers feel the same way about the Titans, but I know the Titans feel that the Steelers have been their biggest, used to be divisional opponent, now just conference opponent, and a good game all the way around. But Big Ben Roethlisberger, a lot has been made about his comeback this year. He had elbow, or was it shoulder surgery? I think it was shoulder surgery last year. No, it was elbow surgery because I remember seeing the scars. And he's got some great athletes to distribute the ball to. I mean, starting with Juju Smith-Schuster, out of the backfield with James Conner, and he's got a couple young receivers, Deontay Johnson, and then the rookie Claypool, a former Notre Dame guy. And it's really, they've set it up easily for him, so much like Drew Brees' offense has been over the last few years. Ben just has to step back. He could have the worst offensive line in the league, and it doesn't matter because that ball is leaving his hand in the first 2 seconds and gets it to a player close to the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage and lets those athletes work. Well, I don't think that'll work as well come December and January. And yesterday, Big Ben, he looked scared of contact a little bit and also unable to drive the ball down the field. So right now, I would still say the Kansas City Chiefs are my Super Bowl favorite, and I think the best team in the league. Do you agree with that at all, or who do you think is the best team in the league?
You're looking at a strong AFC South. When you start talking about Tennessee in regards to them being in the driver's seat there, but the AFC North with Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Cleveland, Cleveland finding a way to get it done. They beat the Bengals yesterday 37-34. Baker Mayfield has really stepped up to the plate for them. I do think the Chiefs are the best team in football, special teams-wise, just speed-wise, athletes all over the entire football field. So they're a lot of fun to watch. But I do love the AFC North and the competitiveness of it, Dalton. And you start looking around the National Football League, the NFC East is absolutely horrible.
Maybe the worst division in the history of the NFL.
It is unbelievable that, you know, you're talking about 2-4, 2-5, 2-5, and 1-6 records all coming out of the same division. That's what's amazing.
And I guess shame on me for thinking that former Green Bay Packers coach Mike McCarthy would be able to come in and at least, at a minimum, pick up where Garrett left off. Jason Garrett, the former Cowboys coach, who is still in the NFC East, the offensive Giants coordinator for the awful New York Giants. But McCarthy, it seems, has already lost his team, what, 7 weeks into the season?
Yeah.
After last week's bad loss, you had players coming out and saying that the McCarthy coaching staff is just not prepared for the games. They don't know how to teach. Now, these were anonymous players that were saying this, and McCarthy came back out later and said basically that they need to keep all of that in-house. But a team that was, you know, this was a make-or-break year for Dak Prescott, literally. After this year, he was going to be a free agent. I think maybe the Cowboys had the opportunity to tag him one more time after this year, but they have yet to sign him to a long-term contract, and we're basically saying, prove it. Prove that you're the guy. And even as Dak Prescott was going out and putting up 350-yard games, multiple touchdown games, making it work with his legs when everything else broke down, there were still people saying, you know, Dak is just not the guy. Other quarterbacks would have the Cowboys in a much better position to succeed. But now look, we thought they had at least competent backup quarterback, somebody who has played on a bad team but played in this league for a long time, and Andy Dalton. And Andy Dalton comes in. I was confident enough to start him on my fantasy team last week, and one of the worst performances from a starter I've seen in a long time. And then yesterday wasn't any better for the Cowboys, who end up losing in a big, big way to who was it, the Cowboys? Washington.
The team without a name.
25-3. They didn't even score a touchdown. And we're talking about a team with Ezekiel Elliott, Amari Cooper, Hollywood Brown now from Oklahoma, Marquise Brown. And, you know, they have athletes all over the field and just not even able to score a touchdown. So Dallas, it looks like they are firmly in the tank for Trevor race now, alongside the New York Jets, Jacksonville Jaguars, the Houston Texans, believe it or not, and the Atlanta Falcons. And now, Ian, I know you've been waiting for me to get to the Atlanta Falcons. So I'll give you one full minute. Tell me, the Atlanta Falcons, are you excited about the rest of the year? What are you thinking?
I'm going to not take offense to that comment, that sarcastic comment about, I know you're looking forward to the Falcons. I am not looking forward to talking about the Falcons, and I will tell you why. I'm going to address this as an open letter format to the management. So, dear Atlanta Falcons management, to whom it may concern and all fans alike, you have taken the trust of one of the greater cities in this country, and you have absolutely destroyed every single amount of insanity that I have for football at any point. I have watched as you have taken arguably the best wide receiver that we have ever had, arguably the best wide receiver in the game with Julio Jones. You have squandered his prime. You have not targeted him when you needed to in the Super Bowl. You have choked leads. You have 3 or 4 blown leads this season already, not counting anything else before this season. We were supposed to come in with championship aspirations. Then Dan Quinn gets fired. And now we're having to deal with, again, Morris as the interim. Somehow, some way, we are going to lose to Detroit. I do not understand why you are still a professional franchise. I do not understand where in the world we go from here. No, you will not trade Julio. No, Matt Ryan and Todd Gurley are not washed. And no, Calvin Ridley is staying where he is. We need a better defense, and that starts with making sure that our team is healthy. Get yourself a coach. Get yourself a new management. Get yourself a new culture, because we are not a championship team, and I am sick and tired. Absolutely sick and tired and angry at this point of watching this team week in and week out waste the prime of my absolute all-time favorite football player in Julio Jones.
I love it. I love the passion. That was great, Ian. Absolutely great. And they did it with Julio, Calvin Ridley sitting there as well. I do know that there is at least one answer for the quarterback position, and he will be the first player taken off the board in the 2021 NFL draft. Not sure if Atlanta will stink enough to get that number one pick, but I can't help you with your defensive problems. I can only help you with quarterback, and that would be drafting Trevor Lawrence or maybe signing Dak Prescott.
Look at how the Falcons have lost this year. They lose on the onside kick to the Cowboys, and then you turn around and you score a touchdown, and the defense signals it for the referees and are happy that you score a touchdown. And that was what was unbelievable to me. I've never seen another opposing team be happy that someone else scored a touchdown.
Well, this was blasphemous. We went through an entire NFL segment, didn't mention the New Orleans Saints, but how about Drew Brees yesterday? 287 yards passing, two touchdown passes without Emmanuel Sanders or some guy named Michael Thomas.
And zero punts.
Zero punts. What a game for New Orleans. When we get back, we'll break down that Auburn win over Ole Miss, also South's win, and Bama 2 coming up. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5.
Sports Talk to start your week. You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwick, Corey LeBounty. Very passionate, Ian Blair tonight. You know, I went to Halloween Boo at Bellingrath Gardens on Saturday. I really, really, really thought about dressing up as Peyton Manning. And by dressing up, I mean putting on a Peyton Manning jersey. But, you know, I backed out. We just took Baby Shark and got her as much candy as she could
there
possibly
you go.
Get. But next year I will wear my Peyton Manning jersey to the Boo at Bellingrath. And we'll talk about that Alabama-Tennessee, I don't want to call it a game, practice.
It was
that,
a matchup.
That Alabama-Tennessee matchup on Saturday. But first, we got to talk about Auburn. And I'm going to go ahead and say a huge win over Ole Miss. It doesn't, you know, launch them into the top 25. It doesn't make them an SEC championship contender again, but it did keep at least one man his job, I believe. You know, I'm not sure how close they would have been to firing Gus Malzahn if the Auburn Tigers had lost to Ole Miss, but they'd be closer today to firing him than they are after that win for Auburn. And, you know, seeing a few great performers for Auburn that really shows how good this team could be if the rest of the team stacked up as well as they do in just a few positions. But really even game overall. Tigers outgained the Rebels by only 18 yards. It ended up being 462 to 444. More importantly, Auburn won the turnover battle and the time of possession battle, although those were pretty close too. But great bounce back game from quarterback Bo Nix. He didn't throw for 400 yards or six touchdowns, but you can't hate a stat line of 23 completions and 30 attempts for 238 yards, one touchdown, no picks, and most importantly, the win, which is the most important thing in these games. Nix also ran for 52 yards and a touchdown. But for me, this Auburn offense, if they don't run the ball, they have no shot. And there were instances Saturday where Nix was left to his own devices and made some silly mental errors. I'm thinking towards the end of the game or into the first half, he ran out of bounds. There was about 50 seconds left, third and long for Auburn. He could have gone down inbounds. The play was going nowhere. He was trying to make something of it. Could have gone down inbounds and forced Ole Miss to burn their last timeout. Instead, he runs out of bounds, and Ole Miss had 50 seconds at a timeout to work with. They didn't do anything with it, but that's just one of the many mental errors that you see the quarterback, Bo Nix, make for his team. But when you run the ball as well as they did, and Tank Bigsby had a great, great game on Saturday, that is, to me, the only way that Auburn can win these games is by setting the tone by running the ball.
I'm going to say this, that Auburn is probably the luckiest team in football right now because the football gods love the Auburn Tigers, and they love Gus Malzahn, too.
Based off of this week alone. Because they haven't had a great season, just in regards
to the breaks that they're catching. I mean, because the Arkansas game, okay, yes, Arkansas had an opportunity to beat Auburn. And depending on how that call goes with that fumble that should have been called, it's a different game. This situation with the kick hitting him on his finger, his pinky, and actually not even being reviewed. I could see if it was reviewed, at least the spike was reviewed. You took a look at it and you just got it wrong.
Yeah, they got it wrong twice.
This situation, they didn't even review it. And that was, you know, all Auburn Tigers, they are 3-2. They did run the football extremely well. I'm still not sold on Bo Nix. I don't think he's played a complete football game yet for the Auburn Tigers. Now, if he does and he gets on the same page with all his receivers, Stowe, Schwartz, and Williams, Auburn has the potential to be a dual threat offense, meaning that they don't just have to depend on running the football. That's what makes Auburn's game successful, is when they run the football early successfully. But I still think that Auburn has its best football in front of them. At the end of the day, they got the win, and congratulations to them.
Yeah, and right now, as far as receivers go, Auburn has option A, and that would be Seth Williams. And then if option A is taken away, you have to go down the list. I don't know what alphabetically what number we'd be on when you get to Eli Stowe, but it ain't option B or option C. He shows up every now and then, and I know he had a touchdown catch last week, but he's certainly not the number two that you would look to after Seth Williams. Out of necessity, he is right now, but outside of Seth Williams, there just aren't many options for Bo Nix. And is that because of the talent in the room? Is it because of the coaching and coaching up the skill position players at Auburn? Or is this on the quarterback? Are there actually some great options out there and Bo Nix just doesn't have the ability to move off his first read, which is normally Seth Williams or a screen to someone? Does he not have that ability to make another wide receiver a star?
Jason Campbell said it best, you know, he gets a little happy feet in the pocket. And because he gets those happy feet in the pocket and does not come off of his primary wide receiver and then takes off and tries to make something happen, normally great things don't happen. But he'll continue to grow and develop, and I guarantee the game planning will continue to get better for the Auburn offense, and you'll see them again. If they're ever able to establish themselves early in the run, then I think that this Auburn offense is capable of putting up over 40 points a game on any SEC opponent.
They have that ability, I would say, for sure. They just have to figure it out on the offensive play calling side of things. But think of where this team would be without Seth Williams. Let's just go over his stat line from Saturday. 8 receptions, that was season high for him. Season high, 150 yards receiving, and the biggest play of the game, that 58-yard catch and run into the end zone with just over a minute to play. That was textbook. Nix found him on a back shoulder throw on the right sideline. He beats his guy, and it was close. There was a tight window that he had to make that throw, but once Seth Williams had the ball, he evades the guy that was covering him and then evades the free safety who came over the top to help, and then it's jets all the way into the end zone. And he almost had another touchdown earlier in the game that he had to go up and get. There was another wide receiver actually behind him, as wide open as anyone will ever get, and Nix, again, not moving off of his read of Seth Williams, threw it up to him instead, and Williams came down with a great ball, lands on the 1 yard line, and either Shivers or Bigsby ran it in from there. But without Seth Williams, could be looking at a winless Auburn team right now.
I agree. I mean, you know, the two M&Ms, I call them Malzahn and Morris, they definitely had a better offensive strategy. And this week they're going to need a great offensive strategy, because I think LSU's defense has continued to get just a little bit better. Not great, but better. And I think that's something, the challenge that they're going to face this week will be fun to see what adjustments are made by both sets of Tigers, by LSU and Auburn.
I want to talk about Auburn's defense here in a second, but first, some bad news for Auburn Saturday. The starting right guard, even though he's kind of bounced around the line, but Brandon Council, who has started at right guard for Auburn, out for the rest of the year. Said he suffered a severe knee injury in the win. So far, he's started every game this season on the O-line, and looks like redshirt freshman Keandre Jones expected to take Council's place on the line. But how great was it to see K.J. Britt back on the sideline Saturday? He wasn't on the field, but he was the lone captain on the field for the coin toss to start the game, and every shot that showed the defenders meeting over there on the Auburn sideline, K.J. Britt was right in the thick of it. So I know they're expecting to get him back before the end of the season. Had surgery on a, I think, torn ligament in his thumb. So he should be back before too long and is very much needed on the Auburn defensive side of the ball. But a guy who has been playing and continued to come up big for Auburn, local product from right down here, Roger McCreary. He had that interception on the first drive for Ole Miss as they were driving in to score. He took it out to the 5 yard line, and Auburn got away from their own end zone. But then in the third quarter, game tied at 14. I guess that was a planned fake field goal.
It was. Anytime you throw the ball over your head, it's definitely planned.
I went back and rewatched it, but quit paying attention. You know, so many times you go back to watch something and then something takes your eye and you quit paying attention. So I couldn't tell if that was a fumbled snap or what, but they tried to convert the field goal, fake field goal, and McCreary had it all the way, stops him, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 yards behind the line of scrimmage. A great guy, and from right here in Mobile, continues to turn up his play.
He does. You love to see the local guys do well. Roger McCreary with huge tackles for losses. He had 2 of those, and he got credited for 4 solo tackles in that game, but he's definitely a difference maker. And you mentioned KJ Britt, a vocal leader that Auburn's defense needs. Whether he's dressed out or not, he's able to provide that leadership and encouragement to the teammates, and that makes a world of difference.
Well, you mentioned Auburn's next matchup. They host LSU this Saturday. They set this time very early in the season. They were expecting a huge game between these two. Obviously, the year's not gone as planned for either team, but Auburn hosting LSU Saturday at 2:30. LSU opened as 1-point favorites. Not sure where that line stands right now,
3.
But it's up to 3 in LSU's favor.
Yes.
They're favored by 3, and that's still with some uncertainty regarding the quarterback position. You know, Miles Brennan was out this last week. I guess he had an abdominal tear. I was reading about that. He suffered that tear a couple weeks ago and ended up playing, I think, 3 quarters through the pain. It ended up being too much for him to play this last weekend, but he did practice today. Head coach Ed Orgeron said he does not know if Brennan will play Saturday. Said they went about 25% today to see how Brennan progresses, and Orgeron saying, I'm not putting him in unless he is 100% ready. But after the play from Finley, the quarterback that came in on Saturday, well, Brennan might be at right around 99% for the rest of the year, depending on how this kid keeps playing, because he looked like he could be possibly a starter for LSU for a while to come if he continues playing as well as he did on Saturday. But a big game for Auburn against LSU this Saturday, and we mentioned Bama beating Tennessee. Corey, I'll have to get your take on the Jaylen Waddle injury. So unfortunate to see him lost for the season. And also South, second win in a row, and another big one coming up Thursday. We'll talk about that when we get back right here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey Labounty, Ian Blair with you on this Monday night. Monday Night Football coming up here in just a few minutes. The Chicago Bears and the LA Rams, a couple teams with good records. Some would say the Bears are imposters, but I guess we'll see tonight when they take on a pretty stout defense with Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey and go down the list of the LA Rams players that make a difference on defense. But I know I'll be watching that later tonight, and probably at least one person in South Florida, one person who's going to get his first ever NFL start this coming weekend. Tua Tagovailoa named the starter for the Miami Dolphins after last week's games. Now, I'm not sure about that idea to let the team you're going to play know who the starter is 2 weeks ahead of time. I'm sure Tua would have been happy with them letting the LA Rams know, I don't know, Saturday this coming week, but the Miami Dolphins will play the LA Rams this coming Sunday, and a heck of a place for Tua Tagovailoa to get his first start against a guy who is, he's coming to rip your head off no matter what. Aaron Donald, probably without a doubt the best defensive tackle in the league, and I don't know if you saw when Alex Smith got his first snaps back with the Washington football team, but everyone was so happy to see Alex Smith back out there on the field after breaking his leg and the infection. No one knew if he would even walk again, and Aaron Donald shows up and literally tries to break him in half. First chance he gets.
Yeah.
He takes no pity on no man, and it's going to be tough for Tua next week.
Well, I'm pulling for Tua. I'm a Dolphins fan, so I want to see him do well. Just wish they would have waited a little bit longer for that offensive line to mature a little bit more. But excited for the challenge that Tua has. And, you know, speaking of Tua and the job that he did, he passed it on to Mac Jones, and Mac Jones just continues to produce for Alabama at the quarterback position.
Yeah, and I was going to lead into that Bama game. Do you think that Jaylen Waddle may have received a text message from his former quarterback after that awful injury, first play of the game on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those freak situations, just like Tua's injury a year ago, and you put your best punt returner, your best player, dynamic Waddle is, leads the nation. He's the most electrifying player in college football when he has it in his hands, especially off any type of kick return. And you hate to see that happen for him. And hopefully, if Alabama makes the push, you'll see him return like you did Kenyon Drake, because the type of surgery and the type of rehab ability that they have, he could come back. But again, I'm not mad at him if he does not. Chase that bag, young man. Chase that bag.
And I know we're discussing a little bit of revisionist history here, but do you have a problem with Jalen Waddle being on the return team?
No, sir. None whatsoever. It's one of those freak injuries, just like Tua's injury was a freak injury. It's one of those things that you wish that did not happen, but he's done it, does it every day in practice, does it in this game, and just gets rolled over on the wrong way. But Alabama continues, Dalton. 14 years in a row, brother.
Yeah.
In a row.
Is it 14 now? Because I'd already counted another year. I was going with 15.
You know, I tell you what. You told me that you want to wear that Peyton Manning 16. Just, you know what? Wear the 16, and that might be the streak when it breaks. If you wear the 16.
I've tried it.
When it hit. Okay.
All right, you mean coming up on year 16?
Yeah, on year 16.
So in 2 years.
Yeah, try again in 2 years.
Because just wearing the jersey is not worth
it. I understand.
I wear the jersey when I want to remember what it was like for Tennessee to win football games. But I totally expected this result from Bama and Tennessee this weekend. I have no one to say I told you so, because everyone else expected the same thing. I mean, outright domination. The Tide outgained UT 587 to 302, 35 minutes of possession to Tennessee's 25, 30 first downs to Tennessee's 16 first downs. Mm-hmm. The biggest problem I have as a Tennessee fan, I expected them to go in and lose this game. I did not expect Tennessee to cover the 22.5 point spread that I think it ended up at 22.5 before the game. I expected them to start Jarrett Garantano at quarterback, who is going nowhere. They know what they have with Jarrett Garantano. Mm-hmm. He's made some nice plays before, but probably the most inconsistent quarterback in all of the SEC. This was about not getting embarrassed to the Alabama Crimson Tide, and that became apparent very early on. Anytime your team starts running draws on 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10, and they don't have a Heisman candidate at the running back position, you could pretty much bet they're getting ready to go ahead and pack it in. And they started running draws on 3rd and long very early on in the game on Saturday. So not surprised at all at the loss from UT. I am surprised that there wasn't more of a, you know, take what you can get attitude and at least try some things, try to put some points up on the board. But I guess Jeremy Pruitt wanted to take it easy on his old coach, Nick Saban, and decided to let Alabama off with a glorified practice
this
weekend.
Well, you know, what confuses me is the comments that you make after the game. And I know Paul Feinbaum touched on it, but for Jeremy Pruitt to say the gap is closing, I don't see it, because, again, Alabama just signed JaQuincy Kool-Aid McKinstry, the number one cornerback in the country from Pinson Valley, and continue to get better in future years. I don't see how that gap is closing at all in this rivalry, in this game. You'd like to see, like last year, when they had that 99 or 100-yard fumble recovery, that swung the football game in that situation. But the talent level is not even close. Alabama continues to dominate Tennessee, and that's what you expect out of this rivalry. But what's scary is next man up syndrome for Alabama with Mechie, and you look at Bolden, and Devontae Smith is going to continue to be him. But Forrestall, just so many weapons that Alabama continues to have.
Yeah, and I want to get into the South Alabama game here in just a moment as we wrap the show. But first, I've got to ask you, trap game this weekend? Alabama hosts 1-3 Mississippi State. That's a night game on Halloween, which is always cool, but they do have next weekend off and then LSU the following weekend. It's tough to have a trap game prior to a bye, especially when you're talking about Nick Saban, but any chance for the Bulldogs this weekend?
Well, here's the thing. I think Alabama's favored by 31. I think they can go ahead and win by at least 21, but Mississippi State always plays Alabama tough, and the longer you let a team like that hang around, the more confidence that they get and build, and you need to put Mississippi State to sleep early.
All right. Well, good take, and we'll be talking about that game and the likely Alabama win next Monday night. But South Alabama, 2 in a row now, and I think was this their biggest Sun Belt margin of victory ever? They beat Louisiana Monroe 38-14 Saturday, and it was all about Kawan Baker for the Jags. 6 receptions, 3 of those touchdowns. He had 154 yards receiving and was named the Sun Belt Conference's co-offensive player of the week. But that is really the strength of the South Alabama offense. It's at the receiver position, pretty much the exact opposite of Auburn right now.
I agree with you, and when you have the receivers catching the football the way that they do, I think South Alabama's confidence continues to increase, but it's a quick turnaround for them. A Thursday night matchup to where Georgia Southern comes in at 3-2 also. Mm-hmm. It's one of those, you have to hate to say it, it's a must win for South Alabama, but at this point in time, it really is a must win because the following week you have Coastal Carolina, who is a top 20 program in the country at this point in time. So South Alabama just needs to take care of business and stay focused on the road.
Yeah, and you know, if we're being honest, the three wins for South this year have come against three teams that are not good, but South Alabama could have been classified as one of those teams that's quote-unquote not good, and this is about winning the games that you are supposed to win, something we haven't seen here in Mobile in a long time. So a good win for them. And for me, you know, Desmond Trotter seems like he should be the guy from here on out. I know they keep swapping him and Chase Levertich out. Even every game, they've both gotten snaps, I think, except when Trotter was injured 1 week. He might have even tried to come in and play that game. But Trotter went 8 for 12, 184 yards, and threw all three of those touchdown passes to Baker. And then what's most important when Trotter's on the field is he can run the ball.
Yeah,
33 versatile. Yards and a touchdown. So a big game for Trotter.
Well, I think that Trotter will continue to settle down, and that's what he has to do. Not turn the football over. Don't try to do too much. If you need to punt, go ahead and punt because South Alabama special teams have continued to improve.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you want to see, though. You want to see improvement, and Trotter's continue to bring that. The wide receivers continue to do that. So I'm wishing South Alabama the best. It'll be fun to watch them on Thursday.
Yeah, and I have to do give props again to South's kicker, Diego Guajardo, former Daphne Trojan, because I was pretty tough on him in that week one win over Southern Miss. Did not look like the ball was coming off the foot well at all.
It wasn't.
After that game, though, he's turned things around and nailed a 50-yarder on Saturday. Also went a perfect 5 for 5 on extra points. He is kicking like the kicker that South thought they had recruited from Daphne.
Right here local, and he's getting it done. Want to continue to see him do that.
All right, that matchup against Georgia Southern Thursday night. Eagles, 5.5-point favorites. We'll talk about that game next week when we get back, and that does it for Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5.